We will bring this meeting of House State Affairs to order. It is 8:07. I'll remind people to turn their cell phones on mute. Cell phones on mute, in case anybody forgot. And present are Representative Elkins, Ramris, Lynn, Gatto, Seaton, and Gardner. And today we have two items on our agenda. The first is House Bill 438, Initiative Referendum and Recall. And we have the other is SB 250, Domestic Violent Sexual Assault Council. And we've invited the members of the council down. There are, those are commissioners, and they're in a cabinet meeting right now, and so they should be down probably when they're done with the cabinet meeting. Hopefully that'll be 9:30. Let's see, and we have not closed public testimony on 438. In fact, we had one person online last time. We asked her to call back, and Dee Hubbard, are you online?
Yes, I am.
Good morning, and would you go ahead and identify yourself and who you represent for the record, and proceed with your testimony, Dee.
Thank you. My name is Dee Hubbard. I'm a resident of Sterling, where it is now 28.9 degrees outside. I just am representing myself, a common, ordinary resident and citizen of Alaska. I'm going to be directing my comments to the work draft, which is slash R, April 3rd. Is that the correct draft, Mr. Chairman?
Yes. Ms. Hubbard, can I put you on hold for a minute while we see if we have a motion to put the work draft before the committee, and then we'll be in the process.
Okay, that's fine. Thank you.
Representative Gatto.
Mr. Chair, I move we adopt work draft CS for House Bill 438, version R, for discussion.
Thank you. Seeing no objection, we now have, we are on work draft R. And Ms. Hubbard, go ahead.
Okay, thank you. There are parts of this bill that I think are really good, and then there are parts that just really are insulting to me. So I'll just start out with that. The first section, I would really hate to see the APOC become COPS. As far as I understand it, APOC never does not become involved with the initiative or referendum or recall process until after the document has been certified to be put on the ballot. And Section 1 demands that APOC get involved immediately once someone has turned in a document. And so I'm wondering why it's APOC. Why shouldn't it be the Division of Elections? Because the Division of Elections is the one that is involved up until the time that the document is certified for the ballot.
And Ms. Hubbard, let me just interrupt. We have both APOC and the Division here, so we will address that question to them. Thank you for pointing it out. Go ahead.
Okay, thank you. Now, on page 2, line 27, there's a requirement that the circulator shall be not registered to vote in any other state. Now, as far as I understand, if you vote in another state, you are not a resident. So I have a question as to why that is in this on page 2, and then it is also on page 4, line 28.
Okay, thank you for pointing that out, Ms. Hubbard.
Now we get on to page 3, And I was wondering, on line four, when it talks about 100 miles, is that 100 miles one way, or is that 100 miles round trip? I don't know.
She's on the initiative.
And Ms. Hubbard, let me just say, if you would go ahead and point out the things that you have questions about and not go ahead and wait for a response, we're noting those down and we'll address them during committee discussion, okay?
That's fine with me.
Thanks.
Further on down on that page, lines 17 and 18, this is something that just really is insulting to me, that you're going to, there's a possibility that I, as a circulator, could end up in jail. And I'm just so opposed to that. I think that's going to cool off a lot of people from even thinking about wanting to do an initiative referendum or recall.
What page is that, Mr. Chairman?
You guys don't...
Three.
You guys pay civil fines, but you don't face jail. You know, why would a resident who is trying to do something that they believe is good face jail? And it may not be through any fault of their own. I just don't know. I'm really not happy with that one. Let's see, then, on page 6, lines 11 through 13, here's another case of me being thrown in jail, because I believe facts that I think are true, and I do a recall, and, you know, now someone comes and tries to intimidate me by trying to get me charged with perjury. I mean, why are we doing this to each other? We've had, one recall in the state, and now all of a sudden we're going to be facing jail for perjury? I just don't like that at all. And then further down, I love the fact that you put definitions in here from lines 14 through 25. I was just wondering if you might look at it, phrasing the corruption definition a little, let's see. If you take it after, under AS 1545-470, and say, that is either misuse of public office for private gain or abuse of public power for personal gain.
Ms. Hubbard, would you repeat that one more time?
Yes, I'll do it slowly. After the citation, you say, that is either misuse of public office.
I don't know where we are.
For private gain, or abuse of public power for personal gain.
Thank you. We have that down.
Okay. But as you can see, I would like to see section... Section 3 taken out of the bill, and I would like to see in Section 1, I'd like to see those duties go to the Division of Elections. And other than that, it's a good bill.
Well, thank you.
If you're going to do it this way. I just hate to see that all of a sudden we're going to be clamping down on the citizens of Alaska because someone in the legislature is mad at us. I just really don't like to see that. We've already had our powers of initiative recall, initiative and referendum somewhat taken away from us by a vote of the people. You know, why do we have to go through more problems?
Okay, thank you very much for your testimony, and we have questions for you. From Representative Lynn first.
Well, first of all, you describe yourself, Ms. Hubbard, as a common ordinary citizen of Alaska, and I would debate that point. I don't think any of our citizens here are common ordinary.
Thank you for the compliment, Representative Lynn.
Did you have a question? No. Representative Ramirez.
Good morning. Have you ever been a signature collector for an initiative or a...
No. I never have.
Okay. So,
Ramirez.
So is it fair to say then you're not familiar with the amount of cheating and the violation of the law that already goes on with collectors?
Well, boy, that's... I guess I'd say that's a pretty broad statement. I've signed petitions, and I haven't noticed anything going on when I have signed a petition.
Thank you.
So I don't know.
Thank you, Ms. Hubbard. Are there any other questions for Ms. Hubbard? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony and your detailed analysis of the bill. We appreciate your work.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Let's see. Do we have anyone else in the audience that would like to address version R? Yes, please come forward and identify yourself for the record. And Mr. Thompson, you testified on the previous version, so
correct.
If what you would do is address your comments to anything in this particular version, not the general subject, we appreciate that.
My intentions.
Great, thanks.
Merle Thompson, Sioux City Valley. During the last public hearing on this, the sponsor stated that he was going to remove the recall sections of the bill. There's a letter in the packet from the Department of Law from Marquez's office and answering some questions, but he says that the reason that he didn't answer any questions on the recall portions was because of the testimony by the sponsor that he was going to be pulling that out of the bill. There are still two sections, I think 3 and 4 in this bill, that address recall questions, and one of the more contentious ones is the definitions part. I was in Superior Court the day, in Gleason's Court, the day that the summary judgment came down on exactly this issue, and I believe that needs to be pulled and brought before the committee because, to put it in a nutshell, the case was Ogun versus Division of Elections. Jean Sador was the attorney for the Division of Elections, and the outcome of that was that Ogun challenged these four reasons for recall, saying that they needed to be more specific and defined. And the court ruling was that they indeed were fine the way they were, and the reason for that was if a citizen can go on his own judgment for the election of a public official to office, that his judgment on the definitions are just as good to remove that official from office. It hasn't happened. It has never happened. Actually, only one has made it to the ballot. So by not having that case law or even that question answered by the Department of Law, I think it is doing the people of Alaska a great injustice when it comes to the division or the definitions that are under Section 4 of this bill. Also argued in court and upheld was the fact that if you set the hurdle too high by adding definitions that make it just too difficult for the average citizen to recall a sitting legislature, then that is going against the spirit of the law to begin with and the constitutional right to recall a person from office. So I would suggest that the summary judgment from Gleason's Court and even the transcripts, if you wanted to get down to the nuts and bolts of the argument, be brought into the to the record on this bill. Or what would be a better remedy would be to actually strike sections 3 and 4 in its entirety from this bill. Other than that, and I agree with the last testifier that the penalizing citizens of the state connected to initiatives, recalls, and referendum is certainly dampening, you know, the public spirit to be able to do these things, and it's probably the exact wrong way to go when it comes to this type of stuff.
Okay, thank you. Does anyone have any questions for Mr. Thompson? Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. You're saying to strike Section 4, which means we would strike definitions. And I guess the question is, where would that leave us with regard to making even a frivolous complaint?
Through the chair. Strike the definitions that are being added. The four reasons for recall have been part of state law since about 1960. It wouldn't change a thing, and we haven't had any instances of frivolous recall efforts. In fact, there's only been one that made to the ballot, and it wasn't frivolous. So one in 48 years, I don't think that you could even make even any kind of argument that that has been frivolous.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto.
And I'm talking in a much broader way. We get plenty of complaints that are frivolous. A couple a year would be the minimum, probably in the order of, if you count your email, quite a few. And so whenever I think of some of the value of a complaint, for me it would help if I could identify to a complainant that I think you have you're entitled to your opinion, but according to statute, you're not satisfying the definitions. And so if we remove the definitions, what would the response be to any complaint? Well, and I'm not trying to find the one case or any number of new cases.
Well, Representative Gatto, I just want to bring us back to, we're talking about the definitions only as defined in initiative, referendum, and recall. So if somebody, I mean, we're not talking about the definitions of somebody writing an email to you about somebody is corrupt. I mean, it's not going, I want to make sure that we address these in relationship to the bill. And if you want to, is there further
bill? I was just thinking, I had an email this morning and the complaint was on the school district. And it was broadcast. Everybody was responsible for one individual's difficulty. And so if I were the school district, would their complaint, you know, how do I weigh the value of the complaint? And so I was looking at definitions.
Through the chair, yeah, I understand complaints. Believe me, I get my share of them myself. And you become pretty thick-skinned, I think, as a public official. But this particular statute that they're trying to add definitions to, the process is a very, very difficult one. The one that did make it to the ballot that I was speaking of took over 10 months, and that included numerous court hearings and hearings in the Division of Elections, and it was a very, very difficult and drawn-out process, and trust me, if you have a frivolous case, it will be picked out of the system and generally in a very quick pace, and also the number of signatures you have just to proceed to each new level is a check and balance in its own, because if the people in that particular district don't believe what you're saying, you simply won't get it past that stage to begin with, much less through the legal challenges, and also the person that is being the charges are brought against has every recourse through the system and through the legal system also.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Dunn. Does anyone else have any other questions for Mr. Thompson? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony today. Is there anyone else online that wishes to testify on 438? No one online. Is there anyone else in the audience that would like to testify on this bill? Seeing none, we will.
Just a question. Was it Dee Hubbard that we were talking to?
Yes. Ms. Hubbard, are you still online? Ms. Hubbard, are you still online?
Yeah, they just unmuted me, yes.
thank you. Representative Gatto had a question regarding your testimony.
Okay.
You were talking about page 6, line 12, and I think specifically under penalty of perjury was a concern you had.
Look at a copy of this.
And you didn't want to be thrown in jail over something that you didn't know anything about. Am I on the right track here?
Somewhat. If it's something that I know, but maybe I don't have the full story.
Okay.
I mean, it may be that, but it also may be used as an intimidation against me.
I understand your concern. I was just pointing to the last fragment in that sentence that says, to the best of the member's knowledge. And that really is the defense that anyone could make. And they would have to prove that you knew for sure. And while I haven't really addressed this question yet, I wanted to make it clear that I'm looking at the issues that you raised and at least trying to ameliorate them to some degree as we address the bill. But I sure thank you for pointing that out.
Thank you.
And thank you again for coming back online. Is there any other questions before we close the public hearing? Seeing none, the public hearing is closed, and now we have committee discussion on the bill. Before you, we have three conceptual amendments in writing for version R. And that were drafted by myself.
I don't see.
I don't have them.
I should have them.
I don't have them.
You don't have them?
No, I don't.
Brief at ease. And we're now back in session. So everybody should have a copy of three conceptual amendments, numbered 1, 2, and 3. And conceptual number one, I'll offer at this time. Would you object for discussion?
I will object for discussion.
Thank you, Representative Gatto. We have on conceptual number one is to page 2, lines 26 and lines 27, and that removes the residency and required to vote in another state. If you look at, we all had the legal services memo that identified the constitutional grounds in which the courts have looked at residencies and denying people to be a circulator because they weren't residents. And so we have a very strong constitutional ground of denying people the right of free speech. And exercise of their rights, and so that's why this is offered. Does anyone, Representative Ramirez, would you like to?
Well, Mr. Chairman, and thank you. Again, in spite of some of this public testimony that we've heard, that some of the legislature is angry, or we want to shut down the recall effort, most of my efforts behind 438 are born out of my personal experience in collecting signatures through the last year, and I was extremely disappointed with how abused the system was. And one of the greatest offenses that I took were the signature gathers, and I have no other way to reference them other than as professional signature collectors who move around the United States like carnies, like carnival people, or migrant farm workers. Representative Gatto, I'd use gypsies except except that and these are all just stereotypes, but with carnival workers and migrant farm workers, they're following the money. And in this regard, this is what I saw with professional signature collectors, is that they follow the money and go find issues. And this is, you know, with all due respect to some of the testimony that we've taken today and some of the hard work by some people that are in this room right now, the fact is that initiatives, referendums, and recalls happen in the shadows a great deal. And I've taken my share of abuse from people that opposed the initiative that I was working on, Mr. Chairman, because they said that collectors will just throw a couple of buzzwords at you and collect your signature without ever knowing what the substance of the issue was. And that was a fair criticism, but one that I felt okay about, because I'm a resident of the state of Alaska and I live here. And but for people from California or Michigan to move up here, to go down to the Division of Elections and to get a shiny voter card, have the pretense of being a resident of Alaska while they maintain multiple voter cards and are registered to vote in multiple states so that they can conform with the rules in California and the rules in Michigan. And this fellow, Bill Buchwald, and two gentlemen that he brought with him who collected signatures for a 90-day initiative, who collected signatures for the Gas Line Initiative. The sponsors of the Gas Line Initiative opposed gambling, so they couldn't collect in the gambling initiative if they were going to do the Gas Line Initiative. And I was personally offended by the notion that a process in the state of Alaska could be hijacked by people. Mr. Chairman, I know you want me to keep my remarks germane to this, so I raise your hand if I start to swerve out. I found that there were different categories of people that would collect signatures. Let's say that the six or seven of us are passionate about a particular issue, and we all consent to carry petitions. If we're not professionals, frankly, it's a little bit like selling Amway soap. You collect the 20 signatures of those people that you come in close contact with, and a month or 3 months later, give back the petition book and you apologize to the sponsor. Gosh, I wish I could have got a few hundred. I really care about your issue, but I just didn't have any time. And then the second category of collectors that I found, apart from the primary sponsors, you know, which I was in my capacity, or Representative Croft, or Representative Guttenberg, or Representative Crawford, is the second category you get are Alaskans that are passionate about the issue, and or they're passionate and they'd like to make money by collecting the dollar per signature. And I applaud those folks, whatever spectrum they fall in, you know, in whatever part of the spectrum they fall in. But I took enormous offense to people that go to Florida, California, Michigan, Oregon, that collect money, that are in Alaska for one purpose, which is to be a specialist. There's this giant fella, Ted Giannoutsis, who collects. He was outside of the Home Depot downtown. He was over at the Sears Mall. He's running for governor in a few months, Mr. Chairman, with his wife. And they want to give you back your permanent fund, $50,000 of it. And Ted is eccentric. He's responsible. He's competent. He's honest. He's an Alaskan. And if he wants to collect 20,000 signatures, I applaud him. But for somebody to fly into our state to shack up in a with friends and flop on a floor and to be here for 30 days or 60 days for the purpose of how many did you get? I got 230 in the Sky Mall at Nordstrom today in 4 hours. I did great. But I don't want to go out to Palmer, because the only place you can go out there is stand at the post office. And I know somebody was out there for 3 hours and they got 40 signatures in 3 hours. I'm not going to stand out there for 3 hours. So you get these professionals that aren't unlike a homeless person in Santa Monica who stakes out a park bench and says, this is where I beg for money, and this is where I sleep, and don't you come to my area. And you get professional non-residents who are in the state of Alaska for a finite period of time for one purpose. And more offensive than that, this one particular fellow, Bill Buchwald, and it did not relate to the Gas Line Initiative or to the 90-Day Initiative, he said he's an out-of-town guy, California guy. He's like, man, it's cold here in Fairbanks. And he said, well, what about the bump? And I said, well, what's the bump, Mr. Buchwald? He said, well, the bump is an administrative bump that I get toward the end of an initiative for an extra 25 cents. That's an additional administrative fee that I get when they're more desperate for signatures. Are you gonna give us the bump? And so you can imagine my offense. I was particularly passionate about the issue that I collected signatures for. But you can imagine my offense to be approached by somebody from California with a brand new voter ID card in his pocket that says Alaska on it, who's asking me to cheat on rules and tells me that it's happened on previous referendums. And I tell you, I walked into AFN that day and happened to see the lieutenant governor about 20 minutes later, and I said, Lieutenant Governor, you would not believe what just happened to me. And of course, there wasn't anything illegal that happened. It was just this puff of, like, pollution. You just saw it, and it was offensive. And so for that reason, Mr. Chairman, I'm going to maintain an objection to your amendment number one, and I also want to point out to you that that the legal opinions only speak to Jane. Can you, Mr. Chairman? Can I have Jane?
Sure.
Help me with this. This is her note. Would you help me, please? So Jane Pearson from my office has done all the work on this elections bill.
Yes, my name is Jane Pearson, staff to Representative Ramos, and it's my understanding from the legal opinions that they do not relate to being a resident of the state. It related to not being registered to vote in another state.
Sorry, say that again, please.
That it didn't apply, that the amendment was overly broad only if you went off the legal opinions, because it didn't apply to being a resident of another state. A resident of the state is determined under 1502.020. It only applied to, there could be a legal problem, a constitutional issue, under not registered to vote in any other state. Because there's already been rulings that you don't have to be registered to vote in the state to carry a petition.
In this state?
Correct.
You have to be a resident of the state, but you do not have to be registered to vote to carry a petition. To sign one, you do.
That's a good question.
Thank you. And before we go any further there, let's go to the legal opinion that was sent to you from Whitney, and on page one, addressing page one, line 11. And of course, this was under the original bill, not R. Down about three quarters away in that first paragraph, under Buckley, quote, under Buckley, Alaska cannot require circulators to be registered as voters. So we can't require them to be registered voters. Possibly we could require them to be a resident. That's a 30-day residency. How you would, I don't know, we can ask the Division of Elections in a minute. Annette, would you come up and identify yourself for the record?
Good morning. I'm Annette Kreitzer. I'm Chief of Staff, Lieutenant Governor Lehman. I'm sorry, Whitney Brewster, the director, can't be here today, so I'll have to do for your questions, and I'll try to be as specific as I can. What I noticed about the amendment is that I believe it's overly broad, because Buckley does deal with not prohibiting people to vote, register to vote in other states. It doesn't deal with an issue which is in current law, that a circulator be a resident of the state. Our request is that you just amend your amendment to only deal with what I think you're trying to get at, which is what the Department of Law raised, which is number four, that there could be a constitutional problem with requiring the person to not be registered to vote in any other state.
Okay, and Ms. Kreitzer, the current law then is that you are determined to be a resident of the state as AS 1505.020. That's current language.
Mr. Chairman, the current law is that to circulate a petition booklet, a person shall be a citizen of the United States, 18 years of age or older, and a resident of the state as determined under 1505.020.
Okay, thank you. Representative Gatto.
I guess the confusing part for me is I could be registered to vote in California, And the day I've registered to vote, actually begin migrating north and now live in Alaska, become a resident of Alaska, never intending to vote again in California, intending to register in Alaska. What happens to that person who is registered to vote in another state but really has abandoned the privileges of doing so?
The Chair, Representative Gatto, again, this is going to be based on my discussions with the Division of Election, and so any testimony I give here today, I will request that they make any corrections directly to the committee. But my understanding is that when a person moves to another state and they register to vote in that state, then our state, let's just say Alaska, we are required to notify, if we're told that they had been previously registered to vote in California, we are required to tell California that they're now registered here. So anytime you move to another state, that's the requirement for that state, is to notify the previous state that the person is now registered to vote in California or Alaska or wherever.
Follow-up, Representative Gatto.
I don't intend to ever register or vote for the rest of my life, but I want to be a resident of Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm still counted in California. Wouldn't I be? I mean, I registered to vote in California. They're not, they don't know what my activities have been just because I became a resident here, do
not
they?
Yet.
Does Alaska actually notify them that I'm a resident here?
Through the Chair, Representative Gatto, no. What will happen is, I think over time, because of the National Motor Voter Law, that in Alaska it takes about 8 years of non-activity,
uh-huh,
and several notices mailed to your last known address. Your last known address, I started to say in Alaska, but it's your last known address. And then eventually you get put on an inactive list, and then eventually after that you get purged. And I would imagine that's what would happen on the California voter rolls.
Ms. Kreitzer, so just to make sure, the 020 here, 1505-020, that requirement for residence has nothing to do with being a voter or not a voter in any,
Chairman, that is correct,
either in Alaska or any other state.
Mm-hmm.
So what we have is a condition that current law says that we have to be here for 30 days. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry, I've been corrected. I didn't bring the statute book with me this morning. I apologize. 1505-020, is this the actual statute?
This is the actual,
okay,
statute.
Okay. A person loses residence in the state if the person votes in another state's election, either in person or by absentee ballot, and will not be eligible to vote in this state again until qualifying under 1505-010. But we don't see that as a problem. Neither Department of Law, and I don't believe Catherine Kurtz's memo, sees that as a problem in keeping that as the requirement, that that's part of the residency requirement under 1505-020. I can say that pretty strongly. I mean, we've discussed this internally about requirements, and the only issue the Department of Law has raised in our conversations with the sponsor has been on this topic of requiring people to not be registered to vote in any other state.
Okay, thank you. I think Representative Gardner, did you have a question?
I have a question for the sponsor about the amendment.
Question.
When the time comes.
Okay. Are you still in the follow-up of the question we're on?
I think so, yeah.
Okay.
The distinction between registered to vote and having voted, do we make that distinction in establishing a circulator's privileges in Alaska? I mean, you could be registered to vote in California, never having voted. Is that different than having voted with regard to this position?
Representative Gatto, through the Chair, you're beginning to get into distinctions that I cannot help you with. What I am relying on is the Department of Law's opinion about this section of the bill and what we have raised with the sponsor and that internal discussion. I can't answer what you're asking me.
And before we go further, just for the committee's discussion here, I am willing to amend this to only exclude line 4, but if the committee wants to discuss the whole issue before I do that, that's fine. Representative Ramos, did you have something? Okay.
I don't have an objection to that, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, so
I object to that.
Okay, Representative Gardner.
What's the question, first of all?
The question was whether we would leave the provision in that you must be a resident of the state, which is a 30-day residency. Is that correct, Ms. Kreitzer?
Not yet.
Not yet, no. Representative Gardner.
Thank you. I just reviewed the qualifications
for residency and the qualifications for voting, registering to vote, and ask the committee chair to make copies for all of us. But my understanding is you're a resident of the state when you essentially say you're a resident of the state. And you lose your state residency if you vote elsewhere. You're no longer a resident. However, you can be a resident of the state and cannot register to vote until you've been here for 30 days. So when I move to Alaska and I say, now I live here, I still have to wait 30 days to be a voter. But I'm a resident even before I can be a voter, if I say I am, basically. Anyhow, those provisions are, those bills, legislation is being passed around for people to look at.
Okay, and we'll wait till we get 020 to read that, to look at that actual definition.
And Mr. Chair, regarding
Representative Gardner.
Thank you. Regarding this particular amendment, I would like to ask the sponsor a question that I think is germane to it.
Representative Gardner.
And that is that our legislature here just voted to spend $3 million to pay an out-of-state firm to contact voters and influence the vote of congressional delegates on the ANWR issue. Now, we're paying an Oregon firm to go to the home district of somebody in Ohio to try to change their vote in Washington, D.C. And I mean, we apparently think that that's perfectly all right, so I don't understand how we would then object to having somebody from out of state come up and work on our issues here.
Representative Ramirez.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I agree with you 100%, Representative Gardner. And if you're comfortable with having professionals influence in-state matters, then we should maintain these provisions, because that's what's going to happen here. In the state of Alaska, and that is what the legislature, directed, is that we should go do that. And so, if you want that same relationship to exist between circulators and citizens,
okay. Thank you, Representative Gardner. Follow up, and then
thank
Representative
Lynn. I think what this speaks to, the heart of this entire issue, is the effect of money in our political process, and the fact is that people can pay somebody to do the collecting that they themselves don't want to do, that the money comes from in-state, out-of-state, locally.
You're still on.
Most of us as candidates can walk around in our own districts and talk to people, but there's nothing prohibiting us from soliciting donations and using that money to have paid people work on our behalf in our campaigns. And the same with the initiative, there are limitations on how that can be. But if we as a society say that it's acceptable to have large sums of money influencing outcomes of elections, I don't see why we should draw the line and say, but that can't happen at initiatives.
And Representative Lynn?
I think that the path that my friend of the right is going down, that refers to lobbying efforts, whether we like them or not. This bill pertains to recalls, initiatives, and so on. We are gathering signatures for some purpose. That gathering signatures is far different than lobbying for some position, whether it's in-state or out-of-state.
Mr. Chair, if I may?
Representative Gardner.
Is it different from lobbying for a vote on an issue, including a recall or election?
Representative Lynn.
I really haven't had many lobbyists come to my office to ask me to sign a piece of paper.
And we're going to take just a brief at ease so we can read the materials that were just distributed.